Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine ND, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Welcome back to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life with Delaine MD podcast. I hope you're doing well. I will tell you, I have a new computer set up. I just went out and got a new computer, so everything's a little bit different. So if things sound different or there's crazy glitches, we're working them out right now, working out the bugs. I like the new setup, but it's just strange to get used to. So using the same recording software, just on a different setup. So we'll see how this goes. So today we are going to finish out Michael Moss's book on salt, sugar, and fat. But before I get started on that, I want to share the success of one of my clients named Sue. Sue and I worked together this past summer, and she just sent me an update this week, a text telling me that she had seen her doctor. And by the way of utilizing the techniques that I had taught her during our coaching time, she has normalized her A1C. She said she got her labs drawn, her A1C was 5.3, and she was thrilled. What she was even happier about is that in the meantime, her husband's A1C also dropped an entire point to about 6.9. So even though he wasn't my client, I never coached him, but he was able to benefit from my client's improvement in her lifestyle. He was able to see benefits to his health from that. So well done to the both of them. Super excited for their success. If you're not sure if you can fix diabetes with lifestyle changes, listen to all these people who are sharing their experiences of how they have improved their health and are living naturally healthy lives. So yay for them. Okay, so today we're going to go over the last part of this book, Salt, Sugar, and Fat, The Way the Food Giants Hooked Us. In review, if you remember, Michael Moss's book covers how processed foods use what they call the three pillars of processed foods, salt, sugar, and fat, to get us to eat their foods. They get human beings to prefer their foods over the competitors' foods. So Nestle, General Mills, and Kraft all compete against each other, and the way that they quote-unquote win is to get us to prefer their foods over anybody else's foods. So, of course, the way this applies to type 2 diabetes and our health in general is that food manufacturers get us to prefer their foods and crave their foods over all others by adding increasing amounts of salt, sugar, and fat. They use these ingredients to exploit the biology and the neurochemistry of the human brain and make us crave their food almost uncontrollably, not unlike a drug addict craves their drug of choice. So the bottom line of this book goes nicely with my mantra. If you can't find it in the earth somewhere, on the earth, meaning on the ground, grown from the earth, in the form that the earth grows it for us, you really should probably avoid that food. In general, the food in their processed forms not only clearly lead to diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease, but they are engineered to make you want to eat it all of the time. So this last part of the book focuses on the detrimental health effects of added salt. In the 1980s, of course, there was a significant increase in the amount of heart disease we were seeing, the high blood pressure that was leading to heart attacks, heart failure, and strokes. Initially, health experts wanted to place the blame of this downward trend in our health on salt. They wanted to say it was added salt, the salt that we get from a salt shaker. But what they found through a number of clever research studies was that it was not, in fact, the salt shaker that was the problem. It was the salt that was in processed foods. So how they did this was scientists did a study where they radio traced. They hooked up the sodium in the salt shakers to a molecule that we could read in urine, that scientists and doctors could read and pick up, that they could detect in urine. They instructed the participants to use the salt that they had given them in a usual fashion and make no changes to their use, but then the scientists were able to look at the subject's urine and see if that salt was coming from the salt shakers. And what they found was that the overall use of salt from the salt shakers was actually quite low. So they were trying to figure out where the increase in the salt in our diets was coming from. It was obviously coming from somewhere else. And what they determined, it was coming from the processed food. And this makes tons of sense, right? Because when did we start seeing the uptick in processed foods? In the late 60s, in the 1970s, and the early 1980s. That's when snack foods really started to hit the market heavily. So since the 1980s, this has been a growing health concern. Scientists have discovered that our love of salt, mine included, is a learned trait. It's a learned quality. Not unlike learning to love other things that don't serve our body, like whiskey. Nobody finds whiskey particularly palatable on the first taste, or most people don't. Another example is learning to love cigarettes. All of these are acquired tastes. Researchers conducted a number of studies on infants to determine kind of whether it's acquired or what our natural draw to salt is. So one very simple study compared an infant's taste for salt with an infant's taste for sugar. So the response to sugar for the majority of infants is positive. When you put a small amount of a sugar solution on an infant's tongue, it produces a smile. In fact, this response of infants to sugar is so intense that doctors actually use a sucrose solution as pain relievers for infants undergoing certain procedures like IV starts or circumcisions. And we know that sugar and carbohydrates utilize the same receptors in our brain that things like opiates like morphine or Norco or Lortab, those kinds of things, which of course is also what they the same receptors that heroin uses to make us feel good. So there's a lot of evidence for how we are biologically driven to love sugar. What they found is that comparing the infant's response to salt versus sugar showed that actually infants don't like salt very much at all, especially in the very early months of life. It's only around age 6 months that infants tolerate salt, but even then they really have to be coaxed into eating a high salt concentration. That's very different from the response to sugar, which makes a lot of sense evolutionarily. Sweetness indicates to our bodies and our brains that there's a high energy content in the food that you're eating. There's an evolutionary advantage to having our newborn offspring prefer foods with a high energy content. However, there's no evolutionary advantage for foods that have a high amount of salt in them. So the study's findings were that infants don't begin to develop any appreciation for salty tastes until around age 6 months of age. Our preference for salty food comes with time and it comes with exposure to salty food. So researchers did another study with infants at age 2 months and then infants at age 6 months. It was the same infants. They watched them over many years, actually. They split the infants into two groups according to the patterns that their families ate, that their parents were eating. So one group fell into an eating pattern of primarily processed foods, which we know would be high in salt. And then the other group fell into a pattern of little or no salt, more fresh foods, more fresh vegetables, more fresh fruits. So at 2 months, they tested the infants. They put a drop of water on their tongues and a drop of a saline or a salty solution on their tongues. And then they tested their response. At the age of 2 months, most infants either rejected the salty solution or were completely indifferent to it. Then those infants, of course, were returned back to their homes and they ate the foods according to their family pattern. And then they were retested at age 6 months. So what they found at age 6 months is those infants who were eating the low salt diets, mostly fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, and fresh foods, preferred the water, not the salty solution. But by age 6 months, and the infants who were eating more highly processed foods, they now actually preferred the salty solution over the water. They followed these groups for years afterwards, and what they found was that mothers reported that the children who had been introduced to processed foods by age 6 months were more likely to lick the salt from the surface of their foods, and they also observed a tendency for these kids to eat plain salt. So these studies showed that kids were not born liking salt, but that they developed the taste for salt, and that taste was pretty intense. It was a created craving where none had existed before. So interestingly, they did a test in adult subjects where they substantially cut back the salt consumption of these adults. Over the first few weeks, the adults were very unhappy. These people, these test subjects, were very unhappy with their diet. But then they found that it kind of plateaued and they were fine with their diet. But what they found when they started allowing these adults to add salt back in at will as much as they wanted wasn't that they didn't desire the salt, but they required far less salt to experience the pleasure with their food that they had gotten before. To the point that people actually decreased naturally just by their cravings. They had a decreased salt consumption to the point that it got them under the recommendations made by organizations like the USDA. So salt is frequently used for a lot of things to intensify flavors, which is why we like it so much. It does other things also. It does things like add shelf life to foods, which we've known for centuries. We used to use salt to preserve foods prior to the advent of ice boxes and refrigerators. Those uses seem pretty innocent. However, food manufacturers have developed the most crazy ways to use salt. They have found that certain foods that are reheated, typically fatty foods and foods with meats, when they go through the reheating process, so they're cooked at the food manufacturer's factory, and then they're sent out to the stores, and then they're bought, and then they're reheated, okay? So these are the foods we're talking about, the ones that get reheated, pre-cooked foods, right? So the food industry discovered that those foods tend to undergo a process of oxidation in that reheating process, and they get a flavor associated with that. What the food industry calls this is WOF, W-O-F, which stands for warmed over flavors. Some industry experts describe this flavor as damp dog hair. And I don't know, now that I know this exists, I noticed this. You may have noticed this in some of your food as you're reheating it in the microwave. Just the other day, I was making my family meatballs and spaghetti for dinner, and I was heating up the pre-packaged meatballs in the microwave, and I don't always feed my kids this way, but this is the way it was in a night with football practice. But either way, I noticed there was a strange smell, and I thought, oh, I bet that's what they're talking about. That's this woof smell, this warmed over flavor smell. I had smelled it before. I thought maybe it was a spice that I was unfamiliar with or some strange combination of spices, but it wasn't. It's this warmed over flavor smell that I was getting. And the food industry realized that this is pretty intense and that the human tongue picks up on it pretty quickly. But they noticed that they could add tons of salt to cover that up for us. They also use salt to texturize foods that become rubbery during the processing of the food. So hams, lunch meats, all of those things have a lot of salt added to them, not just to help with the taste and this woof, this warmed over flavor, but also to help the texture not be rubbery when we eat them. So all of these things are ways that the food industry uses to cover up kind of this low quality food, this food that wouldn't otherwise be palatable to you. So the combination of the pillars of processed food, the salt, sugar, and fat, have created perfectly engineered foods to compel us to overconsumption. Like the bliss point of sugar and the mouthfeel of fat, salt in combination with fat and sugar, the sugars that are frequently disguised as starches in things like potato chips and popcorns and Cheetos, create a concept that's called vanishing caloric density. So again, it's the salt, the sugar, and the fat create this vanishing caloric density. So this is the way it feels when you eat something that immediately melts in your mouth. So Cheetos are a great example. Popcorn's a good example. Some potato chips are a good example. All sorts of our snack foods do this. So the great thing about this vanishing caloric density is it causes your brain to perceive the food as having no energy and no calories, almost like it's nothing. And this causes your brain to drive you to eat those foods indefinitely. So this is great for food manufacturers, but this is very, very bad for your diabetes. Okay? So what's the bottom line? Yes, I know, you get it. Cut the processed food from your diet. I know you've heard it. I know you've heard me say this. But I want you to look at your diet very carefully and see where this is showing up. Protein bars, cereals, Quick Oats, Minute Rice, breads, sandwich meats, American cheese slices, which are actually called a processed cheese product. It's in the name. It tells us right away that it's processed food. It's not real. Slim Fast shakes, beef jerky, microwave popcorn, and all of these are on the quote unquote healthier list, right? These are things that are quote unquote more healthy. And of course, the list of things that aren't healthy are long and very obvious. Potato chips, all your snack foods, Fritos, Cheetos, Doritos, just stay away from the O's. Goldfish, Ritz, Triscuits, Club Crackers. And then there's a low-hanging fruit that are so obvious. The Oreos, the Chips Ahoy's, the Otis Spunkenmeyer muffins, the pinwheel mushroom chocolate crunchy bottom chocolate covered. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. My mom used to feed those to us when we were little. They were delicious. They were cookies, though. They were amazing. Fruit chews and fruit snacks, fruit roll-ups, all of these things are so obvious as being processed foods. Pop-Tarts, Hot Pockets, for the love of all that's holy, there is nothing healthy in a Pop Pocket. I don't care what bizarre changes they make to the formulation so that they can call it low sodium or low fat. They're doing that. They have to cover their tracks in some other way so that the food tastes palatable. Once you get your taste buds normalized to food that's really food, you realize that all of those processed foods do not taste good. Not only do they make you sick, but they don't even taste good. So people always like to ask me about things like Quaker Oats. Are Quaker Oats good for you? And they'll give me, it says right there on the package, 100% whole grain Quaker Oats can help reduce cholesterol as part of a heart healthy diet. Asterisk. There's an asterisk at the end of that in case nobody paid attention. So what does the asterisk say? The asterisk goes with a statement that says, diets rich in whole grain foods and other plant foods and low in saturated fat and cholesterol may help reduce the risk of heart disease. 3 grams of daily oat-soluble fiber may help reduce the risk of heart disease. Quaker Old Fashioned and Quick 1 Minute Oats provide 2 grams per serving, and Quaker Instant Oatmeal provides 1 gram per serving. So the first in this entire paragraph of information, it talks about may help. It may help. It may help reduce the risk of this. It may help reduce the risk of that. And then it goes on to say that maybe there's 1 gram in the instant oat packet, one of the 3 grams you need to find in your diet. In the old-fashioned and the 1 minute oats, there's apparently 2 grams that maybe will help you decrease your risk of heart disease. In the meantime, when you eat the food, you're going to increase your blood sugar, and your blood sugar is then going to cause you to release too much insulin, and there will be a release of inflammatory markers that all lead to increased risk of heart disease. First off. Second off, they say that these are whole grain, but there's nothing whole grain about Quaker Oats by the time you eat them. Of course, the good old Quaker on the box doesn't want you to know this. He doesn't want you to believe this, because if you know this information, you won't buy their foods. Yes, the oats may have started out as whole grains, but by the time they are processed and made into prepackaged foods to make them instant, and by the time they add all the stuff they need to prolong their shelf life, they're no longer whole grains. They no longer offer the benefits to your health that they did when they were in their whole grain form. What they do offer, again, is starches. Those starches are turned into sugar during your digestion. They're absorbed into your bloodstream, causing your blood sugars to skyrocket and releasing tons of insulin in response to the high blood sugars, just compounding your insulin resistance. And that's the innocent Quaker Oats. Think of all of those other things that I just listed out. Much more menacing than innocent Quaker Oats. So this all goes back to the concept that your foods should really be in the form that they are found in the earth, that the earth makes them. Do you even know what oats look like when they're grown from the earth? It looks a lot more like a wheat stalk than it does like the maple and brown sugar oatmeal in the bowl that you're eating in the mornings. The wheat stalk version is not what we eat. That whole grain version is not what we eat. So I hope you found my review of Michael Moss's book helpful. Again, this is Salt, Sugar, and Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. There were a lot of really great things in this book. There were some things that weren't perfect, but far more information in there that really prompted me to take a critical look at what I was eating, what I'm eating. Human beings are not very discriminate in what they put in their mouth. If you think about it, those little silica packets that you get and all of the stuff that you get shipped to you, you find them in your shoes, you find them when you take a new lamp out of a box, you find them all sorts of places. The reason that we have to print on those that they are not to be eaten, do not eat, is because human beings are so indiscriminate about what we put in our mouths. Learning to take a critical eye and look at the things that you eat is a very, very helpful thing to do. I would recommend this book, especially if you're struggling to let go of some of these processed foods that are making you sick with diseases like diabetes and heart disease. It was very enlightening. So if you want to get off your meds, if you want to normalize your blood sugars, like the client I mentioned earlier in this podcast, if you want to learn how to let go of these processed foods that are making you sick, if you want to live a naturally healthy life, free of diabetes, unburdened by the healthcare system in America, send me an email to Delaine at Delaine MD. Let's set up a consult and see what's waiting for you. Thanks for listening and eat healthy this week. Bye. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.